I've actually just witnessed her do, first time I've ever seen it, she was just about to enter the port, and then she's done this big circle, and is heading back out to sea. I believe that it's just a little bit too windy to get her in here, so it looks like they're going to go for a second pass, probably in another half an hour or so.
No, quite a beautiful thing to watch, I would imagine. She's a big ship.
Very impressive. She's very big. She's about the same height as a 16-story building. She's got 13 decks, but some of those are double height. So she's, I guess it's for the pilots, it must be like trying to berth a 16-story building in this kind of wind. It's a very difficult job.
I would imagine. And I mean, you have such a long history with her, Chris. What makes her so special?
Well, she's the last ocean liner that is currently in service. And ocean liner is different to a cruise ship because it's built to undertake line voyages, which is a voyage between point A and point B over a large expanse of ocean. In the Queen Mary 2's case, it's the transatlantic crossing, which is perhaps the most famous ocean voyage of all time. And when she was built, she was actually the first ship built for use as an ocean liner rather than just operating pleasure cruisers. Since the QE2 in 1967, so she's quite unique, and that also explains why she's firstly got such an avid following. I mean, there's so many people down here in Fremantle just to see her come in because she is the only ship that can undertake these kinds of voyages.
And you've been on board her many times. Can you describe what she looks like inside?
I have, yes. Well, she's big, that's for sure. When you board the ship, you enter into the grand lobby. And it's a five-story atrium that has elevators that run up and down. The centre of it, there's a sort of a twin staircase that comes up with the emblem of the ship. Everything's very regal inside. And then there's a great hall that runs down the centre of the ship that allows you to access the different bars and lounges. It ends sort of about midships where you enter the Britannia restaurant, which is a three-story dining room, and it's probably one of the most elegant and regal dining rooms that has ever been put to sea. And just throughout the entire ship, she's sort of finished in that classic ocean liner style, which again is quite different from many of the modern cruise ships.
Chris Frame is a maritime historian waiting down at Fremantle, a dockside for when the Queen Mary 2 docks shortly if the winds die down and allows her. And Chris, so when he gets on board, will be giving passengers an insight into her history. Now, tell us where this fascination you have with ocean liners comes from, Chris. It started at a very young age, I understand.
It did, and it's actually quite similar to most people who have a fascination with ships. I mean, a lot of people I speak with, the passion started with reading a book. In my case, it was a book about the Titanic. You mentioned, I was 10 years old, and it was at school, and I read that book. I just became fascinated by the history of not just Titanic, but also the other ships that were around at Titanic's time. And then about a year later, my parents decided to take us, my sister and I, on a cruise, and we went on the QE2, five nights on the QE2, and stepping on that ship, something just clicked, and I became fascinated with QE2 and the history of Cunard, the company that owns these ships, and it's become a lifelong passion ever since.
That's just so fantastic, I think, I imagine it would be. It didn't happen for me, but when you have such a passion for something when you're young and you can just follow that through with that little star on your horizon and you just keep going till you get there, how wonderful.
Well, I got to the stage where, you know, I had all this information and knowledge about the passenger ships, and I thought, you know, it's really time to do something about it. And I was quite fortunate because my wife, she's into writing, and we just decided that we would collaborate together on writing a book about the QE2, and it's all sort of spiralled from there.
No, it's fantastic, and ocean liners are so just so glorious and beautiful. And once they were such a common way for people to travel, I imagine would they have gone out of fashion around once aeroplanes became the norm?
Yeah, so it was 1958 when the 707 came, particularly on the transatlantic run. Passengers started to move across to using aircraft to get from point A to point B. I mean, you could now measure that journey in hours rather than in days. And so over the following decade, the passenger ships sort of faded away. I mean, most of the companies that owned these great ships ceased to exist. Cunard is one of the rare exceptions. That was mainly because quite late they realized that they needed to change what the passenger ship was. And then when they built the QE2, they created a sort sort of a dual-purpose ship. She was part ocean liner, part cruise ship, and the ship became the destination. And then there was sort of a lull, but funnily enough, in the 90s particularly, especially after the film Titanic became very popular, there was a resurgence in interest in passenger ships. And so in 1999, they announced the intentions to build Queen Mary 2, which is the largest, longest, widest, tallest, and most expensive ocean liner that was ever constructed. And I think we'll see her sailing for at least another 30 years.
And that's so interesting, isn't it? Because if ocean liners were sort of almost a thing of the past when they built the Queen Mary 2, what sort of prompted that?
Well, it was the increase in popularity on QE2 after the cruising industry sort of entered into this sort of renewal, I guess, in the late 90s. But QE2 was getting quite old. In 1999, she was 30 years old. And so she was built with an intention to last about 30 years. It turned out that she stayed in service for 40 years. But Cunard, being the only company that operated an ocean liner, felt that it was important for them to have a new ship that could sort of take that transatlantic run and continue it into the future. And it's interesting because the ship does spend a lot of her time doing that that service, but she also does this world cruise once a year. And sailing around Australia, she's booked out. She's very, very popular because I think mainly because she is so unique. She is one of a kind.
It is. She is fantastic, and it's amazing how much, I mean, you would think that the film Titanic would put people off ocean liners, but I think it's had the reverse effect.
I think it did, yeah.
And now you'll be sharing her history with passengers shortly. Do you still get a thrill when you're on board?
I do, every time. It's fantastic, and particularly the passengers who choose to sail on Queen Mary 2, they do so because they want to be part of something special, part of history, a part of this unique ship's life. And so they come on board the ship, and when you talk to them about the history of the ships and where the ships come from and its predecessors, including very famous ships such as the Queen Elizabeth and Queen Mary, which were so instrumental, say, during World War II, for example, a lot of these people who are on the ship, they want to hear the stories, but then they also want to share with you their stories from when they were young and they were traveling on transatlantic liners. So, yeah, it really is a great thrill every time I step on board. Back in the glory days, before security was so tight, you could actually go on board the ships when they would come into ports. I think it was around about a couple of dollars, you could go on board for an afternoon on the ship, and you would enjoy, you know, tea and scones in the ballroom and whatnot. But unfortunately, these days it's a bookside look only. Security is very tight around the ships, particularly one as famous as this one.